The Mickey Miles podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel, who will handle your family vacation, reunion, honeymoon, corporate incentive trip, or getaway as if it were their own, bringing premium service and expert advice to help you get the most out of your vacation dollar. Visit them at MEI-travel.com or mousefantravel.com.
This is Susanna Cruz, and I am from Chicago, and I listen to the Mickey Miles podcast.
This is the Mickey Miles and More podcast, your one stop for information on Disney races, Disney vacations, Disney theme parks, and more. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles and More podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean, Chris Eliopoulos, and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 467 of the Mickey Miles and More podcast. My name is Mike Scopa, and with me on today's show is Michelle Scribner-McLean. Michelle, it's still winter. It's March 22nd.
No, it's not winter. It's spring.
It's spring. It still feels like winter because
only
because
it's 28 degrees outside.
At my watch, and yeah, and in Boston, it feels like 16.
Did you like the movie?
What movie?
I thought we were talking about whether you liked the movie.
Well, we'll see.
I just can't wait to hear. All right, here's our shout out. I'm going a little rogue today, and I'm gonna give a shout out to the last few people to follow the Mickey Miles and More Facebook page, and they are Patty Moore, Alan Green, not Alan Greenspan, but Alan Green, April Madeir, and Kevin Lackwit. So thank you for following our page, and there's always some sort of gem of information there, so please do follow. Who else is here?
The one, the only, the adorable, Chris Eliopoulos.
I just want to put him in my pocket.
Adorable?
I'm going to put him in my pocket.
Well, I'm small enough. I'm short enough. Why not?
Well, that's the short and tall of it.
Yeah. So, all right. This one is going to be, the song today is so out in left field. It's going to be like, you're not even going to know what it is. But the song is called Honeybee. It's by Joel Nedersheim.
Wow.
It's on an album called Out of This World. It is a children's song.
Aww.
But it's like, just, it's got a snappy little beat, and it just always pumps me up when I'm running for some reason. So
Honeybee,
look that one up. Yeah.
Is that what you call your sweetie?
I call my sweetie Honeybee. Or I call my honeybee sweetie. I don't know.
What do you call Audra, though?
Oh!
Did you see that soccer?
Yeah. Player? That's why I brought that up.
He thanked his wife and his girlfriend.
And then he said, wait a minute. I call my daughter my girlfriend.
Tell me that. What happened?
There's a soccer player, and he was interviewed after the game, and he was, I think he said, I want to thank my wife and my girlfriend, and they said, I made a mistake or whatever. And he's just been, viral, and I'll have to show it to you. And then he's trying to back up, and he says, then he's saying, I usually call my daughter my girlfriend, and that didn't do any better. So, yeah.
Sure you
awkward.
Do. Yeah, we love that stuff. Too much fun. So what are we doing today? Well, do you have a tip for us? No tip today.
Probably a tip. Yeah, I was thinking that for those who go to Walt Disney World and trying to plan how to make the best use of their time and stuff like that, for those who like to park hop, especially if you're going to park hop between the studios and Epcot, my suggestion is to go to the studios as early as you can, park your car, and walk to Epcot. Go through the International Gateway, spend some time at Epcot, and then you go back to the studios. A lot of people say, well, why not do it the other way around? And because you can't, if Epcot is closed that night after you finish your visit at the studios, you're not going to be able to get to the parking lot. So I think that it's a good idea to park at studios, do some studios, visit park touring, or you can go right to Epcot and do park touring in the morning and then in the afternoon and then finish off at the studios. But it's a good way to, number one, get exercise. You don't have to worry about wasting time with buses and monorails and parking, and it's a nice way to take care of two parks in one day. And that's my tip.
Smart.
Park.
Wicked smart.
Park hopping.
Wicked smart. So we parked the car.
See, I'm starting to talk like you guys
in Hollywood Studios.
Wait a second. Do I talk like Mike? Do I have the same accent as Mike?
No, you sort of slip into things once in a while. But
do I?
Yeah, she does.
I do.
Yeah. Well, my wife slips into the Jersey accent once in a while, too. So it's just, it's what we do.
All right.
Well, on Tuesday.
So what do you say? So, yeah, go ahead.
Go.
On Tuesday, what did we do? We previewed Beauty and the Beast. And what did Michelle and I
tell us all this time?
Yeah, we happened to find some seats, and we saw the movie last night. It was a very long time at the theater. We got there around 6:30, and we didn't leave till around 9. So,
that how long is the movie?
Movie is 5 hours. No, I think it was 2, maybe. But I'd like to stay for the credits and listening to the songs and things like that. So.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it. So
it was packed for a Tuesday night.
It was packed for Tuesday night.
Our Tuesday night senior citizens night, you get like a lower cost. No, I'm serious. Like, we
Mike
used to have one here.
It's only before 4 p.m., Chris. So.
Mike gets a lower cost anytime.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, no, we used to have, we had a movie theater around here on Tuesday nights. It was like senior night special, or it was just a special Tuesday night viewing, like, you know, because I guess they don't get a lot of people out. And they want to drum up business, so they lower the prices on a Tuesday. So I didn't know if that was what was going on.
They do a – we have AMC. They do like a 2-for-1 deal and stuff like that if you're AMC Stubbs member, as I am.
Oh.
So,
yeah, you go to enough movies that you get the
I go to
the
movie
plan,
almost
huh?
every week,
oh my
yeah.
God.
At least one. So, nope. Yeah, I go a lot. Liam and I go. So, but I was really shocked at how many people were, I mean, it was sold out on a Tuesday night in Tingsboro, Massachusetts. Yeah, there's one, I think one seat available. So that, I think that's pretty cool.
But. Yeah. Well, because I think the numbers were really good from what we heard about the weekend. So I would assume that meant word of mouth is going around that it's good. So people keep showing up.
Well,
right?
Yep. Yep.
So you got there. You got there a little early. How many hours did you have to sit through previews?
20 minutes.
There was one interesting preview that I wanted to mention to you, mm-hmm. Chris. You know how there was a falling out between Jeffrey Katzenberg and Michael Eisner.
Yep.
So you know, so Katzenberg is involved with DreamWorks, right? And
he is.
There is.
Well, I think he just sold it, though.
Did he?
Mm-hmm.
There is a movie coming out called. Boss Baby. Just before the Beauty and the Beast movie starts, you see the baby, and he's got, on one hand, he's got Cogsworth, and the other hand, he's got Lumiere, and he's banging them together, and he said, I know why you're here, but I want to tell you about my movie or whatever. It was interesting
wow.
how that,
and
you
if that's what you need for the move for to watch the movie, we'll slip that in somehow.
Yeah, something like that. So that was
interesting.
That was kind of interesting. Yeah. So it's not quite I don't know. I guess it is a short, you might say, but it's a short. But that was interesting.
I don't know. That always makes it seem like you're so much smaller than your competition when you do stuff like that.
Exactly. Root for yourself. Don't root against the competition. Exactly.
So weird, but
exactly.
All right, so you went into this movie with a clear mind, or were you already biased? Were you like kind of going in, Mike, a little bit?
Oh, I thought you were asking, Michelle.
I was biased to like it.
I was very most of the time when I see movies based on either previous movies or books I've read or animated films, I'm not expecting a lot. So I was hoping that I'd see some things that that were going to make me say thumbs up. So I had kind of a very conservative expectations.
So let's get right into it then, I guess. So did you was it as close to the animated movie as we thought it might be, or what did it deviate a lot?
Michelle?
Well, there were, I think overall we could have done a podcast right after the movie because we talked about it with Liam too, probably at least an hour. But one of the things that Mike and I think agreed was the case is that it did a better job at telling the story, kind of filling in the gray areas. So right at the beginning, it really kind of sets up the whole story about what happens to the beast. And you actually get to see the prince. Oh, we should say spoiler alert, right? For yeah, this whole thing. This is going to be spoiler alert.
Oh, yeah. I would assume that, you know, right from the get-go, this
is
a spoiler.
You get to see the prince, in the movie, you don't really see the prince until the end, what he really looks like. But you see the prince and what the court looks like before the curse happens. And so it kind of lays the foundation of that a little bit more. And it does... It connects different scenes together in a way that you're like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Like, you may have just kind of skipped over and wondered about it when you saw the animated feature, but it kind of added a little bit more information in parts that made you feel like, oh, that really makes more sense in the movie. And Mike said something else that I thought was really insightful about the way that the movie was told. So it added things, but it also... What were you saying, Mike? Do you remember?
Well, just to reinforce what you said, what they did, Chris, was they took some of those areas that were in the animated film and they bridged the gap. They added the supplemental information that made us say, oh, okay, now I get an idea. So my guess is that 15 to 20% of the film was different than the animated story.
Oh, I think that's too much.
Do you think maybe? Well,
I would say 5% of
them. I mean, I could make a list, but I don't want to spoil it for anybody. So, what I also noticed, Chris, was that, you know, there not only did the film have those portions where they bridged some gap or they embellished so that we could understand how things occurred and why they occurred and things like that. But there were also parts of the film, and I won't mention them, but there were two parts that I mentioned to Michelle that I wasn't... there were two parts in the animated rendition of this story that I thought, oh, they spent a little bit too much time, and I'm wondering if they're going to do the same with this, and they didn't. There were two...
I think you should say, because, I mean, people have seen the animated film, so it doesn't...
That's fine. We have spoilers going.
Okay, so in the animated film, there is a section where the song, there's something there that wasn't there before. And Belle and the Beast are outside, and she's throwing snowballs, and they got, you know, he's feeding the birds, and they're eating out of his hands and everything. And that was probably a 3 to maybe a 5 minute long segment. In in the live action, it's not that at all. It's a maybe 30 to 45 seconds. But there's a look that Belle gives him that says, oh, things are happening, you know, things are happening. The other one, Michelle, I think was just before the big ballroom dancing scene where the Beast is getting all washed up and getting ready and getting gussied up. And in the animated film, it took forever and they were trying all different kinds of styles with his beard and his hair and everything. And they don't do that a lot in the live action. We know that it's something that he's, you know, having a difficult time doing, but I don't think they spent more than 90 seconds on it, which I thought was good. They didn't have to spend a lot of time. So those two areas were really, really good in that they didn't spend a lot of time. Instead of keeping them as long as they were in the animated film, they just kept them short enough, but they told us what we needed to know. So on those two fronts, number one, they added certain parts, and I think that they really made a good choice on some of the things.
But, you know, I'm wondering, would you have thought that they were too long in the animated film had you not this one to compare it to? Because I didn't think about the things that you said until you mentioned it, and I thought, you're right, get it, they're following along.
I always felt that way. It's like watching a chase scene in a film. It's like, all right, let's get going. Let's move on. So that, but there was another. I wish that I could remember the other portion. So they did a good job.
There were other parts that were so good that I wanted them to go on and on and on, continue.
Yeah, there were other things, and I mentioned this to Michelle that there were indications in this film that they spent more time doing research for the time period that this film was taking place in, and they corrected mistakes that were made in the animated version. And I'll touch upon some of them. I don't know if they're spoilers. I'll give you one, for example. In the Be Our Guest song, and a lot of people are going to be taking out their CDs and looking now. If you're watching Lumiere sing Be Our Guest in the animated film, at one point you see the Eiffel Tower. It's like behind him to his left, I remember. And the thing was, it's an anachronism because the time period is the early 1800s, and I don't believe the Eiffel Tower was built until the mid to late 1800s. They don't have that in this rendition. They use a guillotine, I think, symbol that they used.
Yeah, they use a guillotine for something. Yeah.
So they use a couple other things. The other thing is that, and let's take everybody into the Magic Kingdom for a second. If you walk around Liberty Square, you'll notice that in the middle of the walkways, there is brown, and on the outer edges, it's gray. And that's because what the Imagineers want you to know is that during those times, medieval times, or not medieval times, but colonial times, people would dump their waste, and it would go into the streets, and it would go down into a gully that was in the middle of the streets. That is present in the movie. So that was accuracy. There's a couple of things that they sort of not copy, but they hold true to the animated film, but they take it further by making sure they don't make the same mistakes. And I don't want to spoil it because I want people to see it.
I think we should.
Well, in the movie, Belle, she pushes Gaston. He's saying, I'm going to marry you, and he's in her house, and she pushes him. She pushes him, and he falls just outside her house, and bang, into mud. Okay. Then about 30 seconds later, we see her house in the animated film, and there's no mud around the door. So that's a continuity issue. They don't have any continuity issues in this one. There's some other stuff too.
I'm not sure I could say that. I only saw it once, but one thing that they did do more of is explain what happened. You know, why Belle and her father are on their own. How they ended up in the town where they are. They actually go visit the place that they left through magic. And that was kind of interesting. So you find out what happened to Belle's mother, and it's kind of woven into the story. And you figure out why roses are such a big theme throughout the movie.
And
Belle likes roses. There's, you know, clearly the magical rose, but there's another connection to the mother that has to do with the rose too.
And there's also a connection to a movie, because if you are a fan or a student of Disney movies, you know that there's a certain movie which in the opening scene you see Belle walking through a town square reading a book, and it's not Beauty and the Beast, but it's The Hunchback of Notre Dame. And that sort of scene, here's a spoiler. They do go to Paris at one point in this movie, and they mention Notre Dame, and you could see it, and it's like, gee, I'm thinking about The Hunchback of Notre Dame. So
they're laying some Easter eggs in there for you.
Yeah, there are some, and I probably didn't see them all. It's very hard to enjoy the movie and then say, okay, I gotta look for this, I gotta look for that.
Definitely one that I want to see again. Definitely.
I think just for the Easter eggs, and actually, I want to verify a couple things I've seen. Here's another mistake that I noticed.
For the animated one?
So in the animated one, Maurice is... when the beast grabs him, Maurice never gets to the castle on Philippe in the animated film. Okay, he does get to the castle in the live action film. So if he did not get to the castle, and not even near the castle in the animated film, then how did Philippe know where to bring Belle? You know, but in the live action, he does, because they're actually there, and Philippe leaves and all that stuff. There's only one more I want to mention, and this has always stuck with me. In the animated film, remember when B. Beast saves Belle from the wolves, Chris, and and in the process he gets injured.
Right.
And he's on the ground. Next thing you know, you see he's over the horse and Belle is bringing him back to the castle.
Yeah, how'd that happen?
She's pretty strong to do that. But in the movie, they fixed it.
He only weighs as much as a drawing, right?
But in the but in the live action, she says to him, "You must stand so I can help you." So they were very careful. They knew what kind of
Physics come into play when it's a real life.
Yeah. I mean, that's a couple of things that I wanted to mention. So for those who get to go, we'll be looking for those and other things. And I actually suggest you see the animated film before you go see the movie, and so you can make that comparison.
I do want to go back a little bit and ask you, because you made me think about, so they kind of lay some backstory in there and they show, probably because they have all these actors, they want to get them as many scenes as they can, so they have them as live action in the beginning. Does that take away? I mean, I remember Beauty and the Beast, the animated film, the surprise and sort of the fantasy ending of, you know, the Beast being changed into this handsome prince where you didn't know what you were going to get. And then you get this handsome prince and she's, you know, in love. When you see it beforehand, does that take away from the ending for you in the live action?
When you know what's going to happen?
Well, you already know what he looks like. You know what these people look like. Does it take away?
The fun of the animated movie was seeing... made me
really
excited to see it. Yeah, I wanted to see how they were going to do these scenes that I love so much. In fact, I know this is going to be too much information, but I frequently have to get up and go to the bathroom during a movie, and I knew things that were coming up, and I was like, no, I can't go now because Be Our Guest is coming, or you know, the magical scene with the Beast is coming. And they do the Enchantress, I guess is what you'd call her. She plays more of a role in this movie. You see her more. She is there throughout the movie. You may not know she's there, but she's there throughout the movie, and she actually plays more of a role at the end than in the animated feature. So I want to, we're constantly, you know, trying to compare it and, you know, doing what I don't like when people do in the movies. I was whispering to Mike, what do you think of that? And did you see that? And so I was, it's just constant comparison. And for me, it made me more excited about the things that were coming up, because for instance, with the song Gaston, and I'm sure we're going to talk about the actors soon, but by the time that scene was on the screen, I was so excited to see it, because I thought the characterization of Gaston and Le Fou was so funny and so good that I was just almost at the edge of my seat, could not wait to see it. And I, you know, you knew what was coming up and what a silly kind of a song it is. It just made me more excited to see it. So, you know, it's like, I know you have your favorite stories. Star Wars stories is a favorite of yours. For me, it's Pride and Prejudice. I can see every single version of Pride and Prejudice, and I know the story. I can quote pretty much the first chapter of the book, but I want to see it again and again because I just love the story, and I think that's what was coming into play here. If it was a story I didn't like, it would have been different.
Right.
Plus, I was really curious to see what Mike was thinking. And,
you know, I just was wondering, like, did it change that ending for you that you got to see all these people up front? Like, it ruins the surprise of what they turn out to be like at the end, you know?
I just want to say one more thing, and I'll let Mike jump in. When I saw Cinderella, the live-action Cinderella, I'm not as big a fan as I am of that story as I am of Beauty and the Beast. So I felt like my buy-in was very low. I mean, I was excited to see it, and, you know, it's an interesting story, but it's not something that I have to see again and again and again. And I felt completely different from this movie. Mike?
I'm going to stick to my guns and say it was at least 20% change, because there was dialogue that was changed. There was, Michelle mentioned early on, they really explained how the whole thing happened with the Enchantress and things like that. And the reason why I say all this is that the ending is not what you think it is. There are things that happen throughout the movie that you say, wait a minute, this wasn't in the animated film. It's better because it filled the gaps. It made you say, oh, now I understand. There were I know for a fact that there were several different endings that were tested. They had test audiences, and they brought them into theaters, and they tested some endings. And there was one ending that they didn't like because it just didn't make any sense, and so they scrapped that one, and they used this one. Yeah, this, the transformation takes place, and I remember mentioning to Michelle, that was one of the things I was looking forward to, when he changes back into the prince, how they're going to do it, how the CGI is going to work, how the castle is going to transform. And there are some other things, too, that made sense. Early on, when they have the bell song, when she's walking through, you know, and they're saying that she's crazy, she talks to the baker. And the baker says, I'm supposed to remember something, but I can't remember what it is. And what he forgets is that he's married to Mrs. Potts. And he doesn't remember it until after the curse is released. And so what happens is that now we have more understanding of what that curse was all about. Number one, it made everybody in the village, whatever, forget what was going on. They don't know what was going on. That's why they were surprised. Oh, what's this thing about a beast or whatever? So that was a couple of other things that were happening. The other thing that I think we have to realize is that I think time had to have stood still, because when the prince was changed, Chip is 10 years old. When he turns back, he's 10.
Right.
So the question, but here's the thing. We hear that the enchantress says, you know, 20, when you turn 20, you have to, you know, find someone that's going to love you by the time you're 21. So how old was the prince? My guess is that she meant 10 years, but
I don't think they say 21 in the movie, do they?
Yeah.
No,
we have to go back and see. But so here's the enigma. Here's the problem. And the problem is that, I just had it. Now I got to edit this.
Well, yeah. If he's 10 years old when it starts and he's 10 years old when it comes out, the beast has to grow older, but the world around him doesn't.
Yeah, now I forgot my train of thought.
Well, because if he has to turn 21, you know, then it's got to be a certain length of time.
The baker's older than Mrs. Potts when they get turned back.
Is she?
Yeah. Yeah.
So anybody that's cursed stays the same age.
It looks like it. It looks like it.
Do you get to see Chip ahead of time?
No, you don't see.
Well, he's a cup, you know.
In the way that you see the prince ahead of time, you don't really see the other actors ahead of time. You don't get to see Cogsworth or anything like that.
Oh, you don't see them up front?
No, no.
Okay, I thought maybe you were seeing all of them up front.
And another interesting thing is they take more ownership of what happens to the prince initially. There's a reason that's, maybe you're all right, maybe it is 20%. There's a reason the prince isn't just, you know, somebody who's just a selfish person. There's a reason that he's turned into that selfish person that they explain. And the staff, the servants there, take some ownership of him becoming that person. So they feel like it's justified that they're all turned into animated objects. Yeah.
Cutlery.
Yeah. I'm going to sound like a real Disney geek, but I mean...
Really? Has that changed from anything?
No, but
you've
I
ever
mean...
Said?
No, and how I'm looking at this movie. There was a song... what's the song? 10 years we've been resting, whatever. They changed the lyrics. They don't say 10 years. So in the animated film...
Would that be our guest?
That was Be Our Guest. If you listen to the lyrics, they did not say they did not use the number 10. So that's another thing that I observed. I mean, I was trying to really focus on everything. And I'm saying, wait a minute, why did they change that? So that's just another thing. So the whole idea here, Chris, is that I'm trying to tell everybody who's listening that you really got to look into this film and maybe go see it once, twice, three, maybe more than once, because there are some things that they are fixing from the first one, and they're trying to be as accurate as possible. And we got to see, Michelle was saying how we find out about her mother and everything, And we get to find out just how intelligent the Beast is, because he's the one who figures out what happened to her mother. So, and how they got there is another new embellishment to the film. But it's really, I'll tell you, you know, it to me it was the most excellent rendition of an animated film I had ever seen. They just
live action.
I was not disappointed at all. Yes, this is quite a film, and it requires two podcast episodes to cover everything that we want to discuss. So we are going to invite you to join us on the next episode of the Mickey Miles and More podcast as Chris, Michelle, and I talk more on the live-action film Beauty and the Beast. So for Chris Aliopoulos and for Michelle Scribner-McLean, this is Mike Scopa saying we'll see you on the road and in the parks.
The Mickey Miles podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel, who will handle your family vacation, reunion, honeymoon, corporate incentive trip, or getaway as if it were their own, bringing premium service and expert advice to help you get the most out of your vacation dollar. Visit them at MEI-travel.com or mousefantravel.com.
We hope you enjoyed listening to today's episode of the Mickey Miles and More podcast. If you would like to support the podcast, please go to mickeymiles.podbean.com and click the green Become a Patron button in the upper right-hand corner of the menu bar. We thank you for your support. Don't forget, our discussion continues on Facebook at facebook.com/Mickey Miles Podcast. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Mickey Miles Pod. Last of all, don't forget, if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@MickeyMilesPodcast.com, and we'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles and More Podcast, this is Rick Gregg saying thanks for listening and all your support. And until next time, we'll see you on the road.